Vatican to advocate freedom of conscience. What the Catholics have to believe is one religion as good as another. What did Vatican II really teach? Welcome to EWTN's The Vatican II Documents. I'm Father Regis Scanlon from Denver, Colorado, and I'm a Capuchin Franciscan. Today we're going to consider, again, the Gaudium et Spes. This is the pastoral constitution of the Church in the modern world. We will be considering this document, and also we hope to answer the question, should Catholics participate in the modern world? One of the main goals of the Second Vatican Council was to inspire the members of the Church to take an active role in developing society. In Chapter 2 of Part 1, Gaudium et Spes, approximately numbers 23 to 32, the Council points out the communitarian nature of man's vocation, man's calling from God. It is God's will that all men be one in unity with the Trinity. Now this means that we must work together for this unity. Well, the Council begins with a fundamental teaching of the absolute value of the human person. The Council states in number 25 of Gaudium et Spes this statement, quote, insofar as man, by his very nature, stands completely in need of life in society, he is and he ought to be the beginning, the subject, and object of every social organization, unquote. Now, this may seem obvious, but some organizations, let's face it, treat individual persons as though they were expendable parts. How many homes, how many families, marriages have been destroyed by companies and organizations who have overworked the husband, who have overworked the father or the wife even? Not any consideration that they're human beings, not metal parts that you can plug in and throw away. Nevertheless, man needs society. Society needs men. Therefore, the person and society are interdependent. But there are good and bad aspects of this socialization of man. While man is greatly helped by life in society, man, many a person, has been urged onto evil by the social environment within which he lived. There's good and a bad side of this. Now, the Council teaches that what must be kept in mind in this process of socialization is the common good. Now, the Council says in number 26 of Gaudium et Spes that the common good is, quote, the sum total of social conditions which allow people, either as a group or as individuals, to reach their fulfillment more fully and more easily, unquote. Council continues. They state at number 26 this, quote, the social order and development must constantly yield to the good of the person, since the order of things must be subordinate to the order of persons and not the other way around, as the Lord suggested when he said that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Mark 2, verse 27, unquote. One only has to think of the sweatshops, huh? Which have been abusing immigrants from various places. Especially women, these sweatshops, working them terribly under terrible unsanitary subhuman conditions, okay? Requiring them to work long hours. Clearly today, there is a great need for renewal of the attitudes and far-reaching social changes. So respect for the individual person is the building block of socialization. Number 27, Gaudium et Spes, the Council says that, quote, everyone should look on his neighbor without exception as another self, bearing in mind, above all, his life and the means necessary for living it in a dignified way, lest he follow the example of the rich man who ignored Lazarus, the poor man, unquote. Luke 16, verses 19 to 31. You know, I mentioned this last time. As I travel around the world, Africa, Mexico, Madagascar, I realize that we Americans are among the wealthy of the world. You see the poverty, it's just terrible. It's a wonder how many of these, in these undeveloped countries, how these people can ever come to live a decent life. How God takes care of them, I guess, in his own very precious way. Now, the council also teaches that respect for the human person must extend also to our enemies. I wonder how that message will be received in the world. The council says that a person who has committed an error does not by that fact lose his dignity as a human person. This is a very good principle for people who work in prisons to remember and act upon. We must recall that Jesus also made a distinction between the sin which he hated and the sinner whom he loved. No doubt the most difficult teaching for anyone is to follow is Jesus' teaching, quote, to love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, and pray for those who persecute and calumniate you, unquote, Matthew 5, verses 43-44. But I'll tell you something. Without this teaching, there will be no peace among men. There will be just war. Now, the council also teaches as social justice in number 29 of Gaudium et Spes the necessity of emphasizing the essential equality among all men. Social or cultural discrimination is in basic personal rights on the grounds of sex, race, color, social conditions, language, or religion must be eradicated as incompatible with God's design. There are cases around the globe in which women are denied the right to choose a husband or denied an education just because they're women. Similarly, the economic and social disparity among peoples of one human race is a source of scandal which militates against social justice, equity, human dignity, and social and international peace. Now, the council says that it is necessary to transcend an individualistic morality. This applies to Americans, too. We're all too well of the practice of a number of people to avoid paying taxes and fulfilling other just social obligations. Now, the council states in number 30 of Gaudium et Spes, quote, let everyone consider it his sacred duty to count social obligations among man's chief duties today, to observe them as such, unquote. Further, the council encourages participation in public undertakings for the good of all and appears to pay special tribute to those democratic systems of government when it says this in number 31, quote, it is necessary then to foster among all the will to play a role in the common undertakings. One must pay tribute to those nations whose systems permit the largest possible number of citizens to take part in public life in a climate of genuine freedom, although one must always keep in mind the concrete circumstances of each people and the decisiveness required of public authority, unquote. Now, the council seems, as I said, to be paying special tribute to the democratic systems, but it also says you have to look very closely at the culture and the possibilities. For some, it would almost be impossible at this time to immediately have a democratic system. So the council urges all Christians to take part in just common undertakings proposed by civil governments. This is precisely what Jesus did as a carpenter and a member of the Jewish nation. When he attended the wedding feast of Cana, as mentioned in John chapter 2, he also did this. The council says about Jesus in number 32 of Gaudium et Spes that, quote, he willingly observed the laws of his country and chose to lead a life of an ordinary craftsman of his time and place, unquote. Now, in chapter 3 of part 1 of Gaudium et Spes, approximately numbers 33 to 39, the council points out that it's God's will that men come together in a single unity to approve the circumstances of the world. In fact, the Council states in number 34 that, quote, achievements of the human race are a sign of God's greatness and the fulfillment of his mysterious design, unquote. So there can be no question about what the Council says in this matter. The message of Christianity will help build up the world. The Council doesn't believe in any way that the message of Christianity will inhibit men from building up the world or from being interested in their fellow human beings. On the contrary, Christianity is an incentive to do these very things. Now, similarly, the Council says in 36 of Gaudium et Spes, the Church approves of secular activity which is of benefit to man. For example, the Church encourages scientific research which attempts to establish proofs according to their own methodology. The Church affirms the rightful autonomy of man. Okay? However, the Church does object to the idea that material being does not depend on God, that men can use it as if he had no relation to a creator. Not only is this to the disadvantage of religion, it is also perilous to mankind. For as the Council states, once God is forgotten, the creature has lost sight of his will. End quote. Now the world needs to be reminded that human activity is infected by sin. This is what modern man often seems to be unable to accept. Yet he cannot account for the failure of the world to achieve peace. So it is, the Council teaches in number 37 of Gaudium et Spes, so it is that the earth has not yet become the scene of brotherhood. Rather, man's swelling power at the present time threatens to put an end to the human race itself, unquote. So while modern man may deny that there's such thing as a sin, modern man can't explain why he cannot come to peace. And the Church will say it's precisely because of sin. Modern man must discover that he cannot build the earthly city without the help of his Creator and the assistance of his people, the Church. For the fundamental law of the perfection of mankind and the transformation of the world is the new commandment of love as taught by Jesus Christ. Mankind's yearning for a perfect world is actually a longing for the new kingdom found in Christian revelation, which promises a new heaven and a new earth. While the Church teaches that the world will pass away, it also teaches that love will last forever and will participate in the new kingdom. But as for the Christian, the Council states in number 39 of Gaudium et Spes, quote, far from diminishing our concern to help develop this earth, the expectancy of a new earth should spur us on. Excuse me. For it is here that the body of the new human family grows, foreshadowing in some way the new age, which is to come. Here on earth, the kingdom is mysteriously present. When the Lord comes, it will enter into its perfection. So, once the Council has pointed out the necessity for the Church to become involved in the modern world, it then points out in chapter 4 of part 1, approximately numbers 40 to 45, in Gaudium et Spes, what role the members of the Church should play in the modern world. The Council says that the Church, which is a visible organization, a spiritual community, is the soul of the world. One of the roles of the Church is to elevate the dignity of the human person. In doing so, the Church contributes much to the humanization of the family of man. The Council states in number 41, Gaudium et Spes, this paragraph, listen very carefully, quote, in virtue of the gospel entrusted to it, the Church proclaims the rights of man. She acknowledges and holds in high esteem the dynamic approach of today, which is fostering these rights all over the world. But this approach needs to be animated by the spirit of the gospel and preserved from all traces of false autonomy. For there is a temptation to feel that our personal rights are fully maintained only when we are exempt from every restriction of divine law. But this is the way leading to the extinction of the human dignity, not its preservation. Now, one immediately thinks of those people who mistakenly claim that unless they have the freedom to practice contraception, abortion, or homosexual acts, their basic human rights are being denied. These people think that freedom means freedom from law, even divine law. The council is saying that it is the role of the church to enter into dialogue with these people and to try to help them come to the truth. The council states that since the church does not belong to any specific culture or nation and is not committed to any specific political, economic, or social system, the church can help human society come into unity. Number 42 of Gaudium et Spes, the council points out that this universal character, the church, about this universal character, church, the council says this. It says, quote, hence the church can be a very close bond between the various communities of men and nations, provided they have trust in the church and guarantee a true freedom to carry out its mission, unquote. So because of the universal nature of the church, it's not tied to this or that culture, or economic system, political system. Because of that universal characteristic, the church can be a means of bringing all the systems, all the people, all the cultures together in unity. Provided, it says, that they trust the church and give its freedom for its mission. Now, the council urges Christians, as citizens of both earthly and heavenly cities, to perform the duties of their state in life in the spirit of the gospel. The council says that it's an error for Christians to think that because they ultimately belong to the heavenly city, that they can ignore their civic obligations on earth, like paying taxes. The council then states in number 43, Gaudium et Spes, this following statement. Listen very closely. Quote, but it is no less mistaken to think that we may immerse ourselves in earthly activities as if these latter were utterly foreign to religion, and religion were nothing more than the fulfillment of the acts of worship and observance of a few moral obligations. One of the gravest errors of our time is the dichotomy between the faith which many profess and the practice of our daily lives. As far back as the Old Testament, the prophets vehemently denounced the scandal, and in the New Testament, Christ himself, the greater force, threatened with severe punishment. Let there be no such pernicious opposition between professional and social activity on the one hand and religious life on the other. The Christian who shirks his temporal duties shirks the duty towards his neighbor, neglects God himself, and endangers his eternal salvation. Unquote, number 43. Most of us today are familiar with the spectacle of public officials professing their Catholic faith with a congregation on Sunday and then publicly voting to make abortion homosexual acts permissible. The council is referring to this kind of scandal. The council is pointing out that the serious obligation for a Christian to profess his Christian values in the marketplace, at the business office, where these values and teachings will often be challenged by others. This is precisely the gift which the Christian brings to the dialogue with the modern world and the development of secular society. Excuse me. Catholics must not be afraid to give witness to the Church's teachings and values when these teachings and values are opposed by others in the world, especially when the Catholic holds a civic office and can do the most good. The Council states about the Christian in number 43 of Gaudium et Spes, quote, it is their task to cultivate a properly informed conscience and to impress the divine law on the earthly city. It is rather up to the layman to shoulder their responsibilities and the guidance of Christian wisdom and with eager attention to the teaching authority of the church. Only in this way can the church receive from the world what it has to offer and raise it up to a higher and more pure standard of Christian life. Only in this way will the secular world be able to discover, as the council says in number 45, that, quote, the Lord is the goal of human history, the focal point of the desires of history and civilization, the center of mankind, the joy of all hearts, and the fulfillment of all aspirations. But we must ask ourselves, we look at this and we say, this is wonderful. This is what the council said back there in 1966, following the council. But what has happened since the council? Again, It's more than 30 years since the council document Gaudium et Spes, before it was promulgated. Hindsight reveals that the Second Vatican Council directives to Christians involved in the modern world was correct. But Christians, for one reason or another, did not listen to the council and become involved in the modern world. They did become involved in the modern world. In most cases, one suspects that Christians do not even know about the council's document, Gaudium et Spes. Christians did not bring their moral principles and teachings of the Catholic Church into the marketplace. Consequently, evil got the upper hand. In many places today, evil principles made their way into the workplace, and now many Christians feel overwhelmed. In many instances, the Christian finds that the moral principles which has been accepted in the workplace make it impossible for him to continue to work, for the Christian cannot cooperate in evil. There are those who say that a Christian must do what is necessary to keep his job. This is not true. They say this is justified even if one has a family, especially if one has a family. Again, this is not true. A Christian can never do evil. A Christian must give his life up rather than cooperate with evil. Now, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says this about that. Quote, sin is a personal act. Moreover, we have a responsibility for the sins committed by others when we cooperate with them. By participating directly and volunteering in them, by ordering, advising, praising, or approving them, by not disclosing or not hindering them when we have an obligation to do so, and by protecting evildoers. This is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 1868. So cooperation with evil is sinful, personally sinful. Now, John Paul II mentions this in relation to abortion and euthanasia. He says this, quote, the passing of unjust laws often raises difficult problems of conscience for the morally upright people who regard the issue of cooperation since they have a right to demand not to be forced to take part in morally evil actions. Sometimes the choices which have to be made are difficult. They may require the sacrifice of prestigious professional positions or the relinquishing of reasonable hopes of career advancement. So we have to face the fact that because we did not implement the Second Vatican Council since the last 30 years, that evil has gotten the upper hand in society. And now the Christian, the Catholic, is in a position where there's many things that he has to give up. He can't work. Okay? I had a retreat for a group of college students, a group of young workers. They start naming things which they could not do because of their Catholic faith no longer. They had to pass up these jobs. In some cases, they had to leave the jobs because they required you to do evil. Just listen to this list. Movie theaters. They couldn't be head nurses and floor on hospitals. Television stations. Not EWTN, of course. Swimming pools. They couldn't sit around, stand around as lifeguards, watching and speaking with those who are wearing string bikinis and other immodest swim apparel, like the French cut swimwear. They couldn't do that. Hotels, apartment complexes. They could not sell or rent rooms to homosexual couples, so they couldn't get in that business. A tax account. One person had to give up a job because he was asked to take care of the books of Planned Parenthood, which approved of abortion. And then there's supermarkets. Two people told me they had to quit their job at the supermarket because they could not check out or stock sexy and suggestive magazines and condoms. So, you know, we smile, but what's happened is we Christians are being marginalized out of society. We're being pushed out of the economic life of society because we did not implement the values, the teachings of Gaudium et Spes, the documents of Vatican II, had to do with the pastoral constitution in the modern world. We didn't implement them, so now we're paying the price. Now evil's got the upper hand. But it's not too late. We must read these documents. We must study the constitution, pastoral constitution in the modern world. We must put it together. We must go out and live in society. And if we should suffer, then that's God's will. But our suffering will be a testimony to others. And it's only by that testimony, that martyrdom, that witness, that others will be convinced of the truth of the Catholic faith. Well, I'd like to thank you for being with us today. And we're when we start talking about the modern world, we have many, many, many questions. And so I want to ask you to join us next time. Next time we're going to be talking about marriage and Gaudium et Spes. What does Gaudium et Spes say with regard to marriage? And so, especially if you have any young couples, you know, you might want them to be present there for this next discussion. Thank you. Be with the next time. We will continue the discussion of Gaudium et Spes and married love. Okay, God bless you.